From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Mary Louise Kelly.
And I'm Robert Siegel. His name was Chester Arthur Burnett, but he was known as Howlin' Wolf. He played harmonica, and some people say he was the greatest blues singer of all time. Howlin' Wolf's unique voice mesmerized audiences and hugely influenced rock and roll. NPR's John Burnett has this appreciation for our series, 50 Great Voices.
On a Saturday night in 1957, the marquee at Silvio's Lounge on the west side of Chicago was a blues lover's dream.
They had three bands, Howlin' Wolf Band, Muddy Waters Band, and my band.
Bluesman Billy Boy Arnold says he heard lots of great blues singers in those days, but there was never anyone or anything like Howlin' Wolf.
Well, he had the most unusual voice in the history of blues. That was his trademark. A lot of people try to imitate him, but he just had that big, booming voice.
Well, somebody calling me, calling me on my telephone.
Singer Ronnie Hawkins said it was stronger than 40 acres of crushed garlic. Bonnie Raitt said he was the scariest bit of male testosterone I've ever experienced. When legendary record man Sam Phillips first heard Wolf on the radio, he averred, "This is where the soul of man never dies." Maybe his guttural sound was a result of severe tonsillitis he had as a child, or maybe Chester Burnett's hard early years somehow came out in his voice.
It was plying four mules on the plantation.
He was born 100 years ago, black and destitute, in Clay County, Mississippi, cast out of his home, raised by an abusive uncle who whipped him with a leather plow line, so poor he once tied burlap sacks around his bare feet, and so hungry he once ate food scraps tossed off a train by railroad workers. Howlin' Wolf, like so many bluesmen before and after him, found release in music.
Tell Automatic Slim, tell Ray's Toten Jim, tell Butch and I Toten Annie, tell Fast Talking Fanny, we gon' pitch a ball down to that Union Hall. We gonna romp and tromp till midnight.
While he was a young man sharecropping in Mississippi, Wolf apprenticed with Delta blues legend Charlie Patton. And as Wolf said on a Chess record in 1968, he was deeply influenced by Patton's gritty singing and percussive playing.
I liked his sound. And so every night that I'd get off of work, I'd go over to his house and he'd learn me how to pick the guitar. So I got good with it.
Wolf started playing on weekends in country juke joints, then moved to Memphis, made a name for himself, and finally settled in Chicago to become, literally, a giant of the blues.
Hoy, hoy, I'm the boy. I got 300 pounds of a heavenly joy. I'm so glad.
Big man, goes out 16 shoe, and his stage presence. And when he talked or sang, I mean, people listened to him, you know.
Jody Williams played guitar alongside Hubert Sumlin in Wolf's band in 1954. And of all the famous musicians Williams backed up, Bo Diddley, Memphis Slim, Big Joe Turner, Wolf is the one he remembers best.
He even went outside the door of the club. He had a long, about 100-foot cord on his microphone. So Hubert and the rest of the band and I, we were on the stage playing, and Wolf just howling and singing the candle. So he went out the door, down the sidewalk to the corner, and he just blowing his harmonic and howling and candle. But that was the Wolf.
That was the Wolf.
Wolf would crawl around on his hands and knees, and he'd howl like a wolf.
Mark Hoffman is co-author of Moanin' at Midnight, The Life and Times of Howlin' Wolf.
He'd pound on the stage, and people would watch him. They just couldn't take their eyes off him.
I am a little red rooster, too late to crow for day.
With his feral stage presence and growling vocals, Wolf fought his way to the top of the cutthroat Chicago blues scene during the 1950s, neck and neck with his rival, Muddy Waters. In the 60s, young white rock and rollers discovered his music and began to cover his classic renditions of Little Red Rooster and Spoonful. In 1965, the Rolling Stones, fresh from England, appeared on the ABC TV show Shindig. They had one condition. Their idol, Howlin' Wolf, had to be there too. A hulking black eminence stands at the microphone in a dark suit, his huge head sweating, stabbing the air with his finger, shaking his hips salaciously before a bevy of white go-go dancers.
How many more years to have to let your dog be around?
It's surely one of the most incongruous moments in American pop music. Music journalist Peter Guralnick, who reveres Howlin' Wolf, goes even further. He calls it one of the greatest cultural moments of the 20th century.
What was so great about seeing Wolf on Shindig was it was, in a sense, reality imposing itself on this totally artificial setting. And while, you know, the Stones, I was a big fan of the Stones, and seeing them on the show was exciting and everything, but it was altogether appropriate that they would be sitting at Wolf's feet. And that's what it represented. I mean, his music was not simply the foundation or the cornerstone. It was the most vital thing that you could ever imagine.
Oh, smokestack lightning, shining just like gold. Why don't you hear me cry? Ooh, 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 ooh.
I had a woman once. She was kind of nice to me, and she pulled off and left me, and that gave me the blues, sure enough. I went to howling like a dog then, you know what I mean?
Oh, don't you hear me cry? Woo.
Since Chester Burnett died 34 years ago, there's been a postage stamp with his face on it, a statue in his hometown, a blues festival in his name, and numerous Hall of Fame inductions and record reissues. The Wolf Keeps Howling. John Burnett, NPR News.
Our program is directed by Greg Dixon, edited by Corey Turner, and produced by Franklin Cater. The technical director is Stu Rushfield. The engineering supervisor is Dennis Herndon.
Our executive producer is Christopher Turpin. The managing editor for NPR News is David Sweeney. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Mary Louise Kelly, and you're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.
Whoa!